Relevant content for our members, by our members. This is TMC Connect.
Yeah. You think, just when you think that the world isn't going to change anymore, it, you know, it surprises you, right?
Yeah, that's kind of like what they say about people that fly crop dusters, which is a little small ag airplane that it's not if you're going to crash, it's when. You know, now it's like, you know, might as well just get used. It's change. It's just like, what's the change going to be today?
Yeah, exactly. Well, thanks for joining us, everyone. We're going to give just like 30 seconds or so for people to populate in. There are a lot of people that are logging in right now, and then we will get started. Well, I grew up on a farm, so I've seen those planes fly, you know, 10 feet off the ground and be spraying behind them. And I always did think that was scary, but
yeah. I would never say anyone is crazy, but I think they have a higher risk tolerance than I do.
Higher risk tolerance. And I always wondered whether maybe it was some of the fumes that they had breathed in over the years that made them have that higher risk tolerance. But that was just my thought process from the girl that grew up in the country, but knew she never wanted to live there, even when she was like 10 years old. So maybe that had something to do with it, too. It's like, these people are crazy. I need to get out of here. Yeah.
Well, we and will welcome to mortgage.
And then I ended up here, right? Yeah, exactly. Well, we're going to go ahead and get started, everyone. This is the last week in Mortgage Today. Thank you so much for joining us. And I have the great pleasure of having Keith Little with me today, who is the Mortgage Division President from Centennial Bank. Thank you for doing this, Keith. You guys have been in network since July of 2017, which just, yeah. It's like, that just seems impossible, but it is based out of Arkansas. And you want to just like, so people know kind of who the people that are on here that don't know you already, which a lot of people do, but give just like a little blurb about Centennial and kind of who you are and that type of thing before we get started. So they'll understand your perspective maybe on things.
I used to say we're a regional bank. I think community bank is the better term to use this day and age. $24 billion bank based out of Arkansas, hence the ag flying conversation we had earlier. We're footprints Arkansas, Florida, Texas, one little county in Alabama, and an office in Midtown Manhattan. So we're pure retail depository shop. Been around since, I guess, said 17. It doesn't seem like that long, but I remember the first conference we went to out in Scottsdale. So that was many, many moons ago. So
yeah, even before my time here. So you are at the top of our list of early adopters of the Mortgage Collaborative, and we always appreciate you and your feedback. So let's get started here. We were talking a little bit before we went online about you know, declining house prices. There's been varying information out there. I know you saw an article that said one place that may be beneficial for you in your recruiting efforts. I saw an article that had six places. Probably the one that was at the top of the list, which was the one we were talking about, is Austin, Texas, seeing some declines. So would just kind of love to hear, because you're in that market, any feedback that you have on that or anything that you've seen that makes that not surprising to you?
Yeah, I guess it's not surprising. Austin has been on a short list of markets that whether we're there or not, I was kind of worried about, just because you saw such exponential growth in prices and new people coming into the market. And if you look at something like Nashville, it's always one too, but I think their employment base may be, you know, a little bit, I don't know, more sound. You got medical, you got Bridgestone there. You got your big employers aren't the ones that have had to go through layoffs so far. But Austin, most of their growth has been driven by the tech sector. And they seem to be the people that even before the mortgage, you know, cutback started, tech was having a race to see who could lay off the most people, it seemed like, between Google, Meta, or what's the same, Facebook, you know. All those tech companies are really having some layoffs, so it's not surprising. And I don't know that anybody can afford to live there anymore. Just the way that before rates went up, the prices had gone up so much, and then you combine that with rate increases, and it's a bad mix.
And we definitely, we have a number of companies that are with us, that are with TMC, that are in network in Austin. So if anybody has some additional feedback, we're always open to kind of like hearing via chat in the bot what you see going on in those markets. The other markets were Phoenix, and Phoenix has been a very hot market for a long time that we've heard from a number of people have become very not affordable. So again, for that same reason, not surprising. Seattle, St. Augustine, Florida, Vegas, and then Huntsville, Alabama rounds out the top six. You know, Huntsville, we were kind of talking about that it was, you know, we thought that that was kind of an unusual one to end up on the list. And you had some insight into, you thought that there were some government contractors and stuff in that area. So what do you think about the rest of the people that showed up on that list?
Well, I mean, you know, and like we were saying, that's why I think Huntsville was surprising to me, because I thought that would have been pretty stable. And with Austin and Phoenix, I kind of wonder, is it the whole MSA they're looking at, or is it just like Austin proper? Because we're seeing a lot of flight out to the suburbs, people wanting to build, and a lot of folks probably cash out the equity in town and get out and build something bigger. So I don't know if that's the entire MSA is the stats are declining, or if it's just like the town proper. Because you know, Austin is seeing a lot of people kind of move north, and that whole I-35 corridor is going to grow together at some point in the next few years. So
yeah, I don't know. They didn't say in the article. I usually do make note of those types of things. I do think it's interesting because they positioned the whole article from economic uncertainty and low inventory. So, you know, maybe it was partially how things are positioned. I don't believe in the headlines sometimes anymore. I like to dig deeper into them. One of the other things that we were talking about before that came up in the news this week is how much home flipping is still thriving despite, you know, availability of homes and all of those things. I was kind of surprised that with rates where they were, but I was thinking about it from that angle, that there would still be 10% of U.S. homes that were sold that were flipped properties. So kind of share with me your thoughts on that, on how you feel and how you kind of see that. It seemed like a larger number than what I would have thought at this point.
Well, and this kind of may play into a point on the last discussion. So we've been in the market looking to relocate here last month, and there wasn't a whole lot out there inventory wise, but I would think probably at least a third of the properties we looked at were flips, and all of them were being done by realtors. And so I don't know if it's a function of, you know, the consumer doesn't have the, for properties that need updates, I don't know how many buyers have the cash to buy them and update them themselves versus just financing. And like we're saying, I don't know how much of that is realtors trying to, you know, squeeze a couple nickels together because they have less to sell. So they're trying to kind of create their own inventory that they can, you know, they can make a little bit more margin on.
Yeah. It was like almost 73,000 single family homes and condos were flipped. And I think all of those are valid. When I initially was thinking about this, I was thinking about it from the cost of financing something like that. You know, but when we were talking, it's like, well, maybe all of those flippers made so much money in the past couple of years that they just stockpiled their cash and they're doing cash buys, which is what still maybe makes it an affordable situation. I was thinking from the not affordable at this
point. Yeah. I mean, if they're having to borrow those funds for, you know, 4-6 months to do it, if you're borrowing money at 8-9 handle from a commercial lender, that you got to have some pretty good margin there on the flip to make that make sense. But kind of made me think when you talked about flipping that, you know, I'm looking at Austin here on the screen and they got a lot of short-term rentals down there. And I'm wondering if that has some effect in some of those markets that, you know, a lot of municipalities are starting to move to limit the short-term rentals. because of the squeeze it puts on affordability. And if those investors are backing out of the market, if that's causing some of those houses to sit a little bit longer than they were before. If people actually think twice about what they buy before they buy it and don't have buyer's remorse, that's a good thing long term. So I'm not going to complain about that.
I agree. I did go and look at where those home flips primarily were. Interesting enough, two are in Pennsylvania, Scranton and Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, which had a large percentage of them. Flint, Minnesota, which, I mean, I've lived in Minnesota since 1987, and I don't even know where that is. So it's not part of the Twin Cities, which I think is kind of interesting. Shreveport and then New Orleans were some of the places that saw big increases in those markets. Atlanta and Macon, Georgia, had high flipping rates. And that doesn't surprise me because of the growth around Atlanta. That one's not surprising to me at all.
No, I'm with you on Atlanta. I don't know that much about the Macon market. Well, I think that's like the home of the Allman Brothers. That's about the only thing I know about Macon. But yeah, I could see that makes a lot of sense in Atlanta. They've had a lot of influx of people. I wonder if we find out there's a correction and that article was really talking about Flint, Michigan instead of Minnesota. And they had a typo.
You could be right. I'm like, I don't know where Flint, Minnesota is. You might be right. It might be Flint, Michigan. That makes a heck of a lot more sense. I think Macon is in comparison to Atlanta. I think Macon is one of those situations where Macon and Atlanta are like growing, growing together. And as people move a little bit further outward, that's probably where some of that population has gone. But if somebody's on the call and wants to set us straight on that one, that would be welcomed if you know what that is. I every week try to come up with a term because I think it's just a funny, silly thing that the mortgage industry is constantly either making up terms or making acronyms that people coming in have to always try to understand what others are talking about. So this week I came up with the whisper listing. Have you heard of this one before?
No, this was a new term for me. And like we talked about, maybe this is a euphemism for a pocket listing. We don't do subprime anymore. We have non-QM. So there's pocket listings bad, but maybe there's whisper listings. But I've seen it. It's certainly happening. And I think every buyer's agent out there's got a list of people. And if they, if they hear of something that's about to hit the MLS, they got a list of folks that they're trying to get in there before it actually hits the market to show it. So maybe the timing of it is what defines it as a whisper. With your sayings, I learned two new ones last week. It was rolling recession, where they're saying instead of a major recession, it's just affecting each industry and then moving on to the next sector and one sector at a time, pulling back. And then the other term was a rich session. So that, it was more just affecting, discretionary spending and higher net worth folks. So I'm not sure. Milk and eggs sure do cost more. And I don't consider myself in the upper income bracket. So maybe I'm getting rolled over there with the other folks.
I have not heard of either one of those as well. The only difference and maybe it was the case with a pocket listing. I know a lot of places have legislation around pocket listings that they can't happen or be advertised in certain ways anymore. But this was it, the potential sale of the property that for strategic reasons is not listed. And so it's like, oh, well, that's super interesting. So they're going to whisper about it for a while so that they get people really, really excited about it and then sell it. I just thought it was, kind of funny.
And the strategy may be to drive more over asking offers. If you create the demand before it's even out there, then you're probably going to sell it for more money. So
It was like, okay, so it's either that or, you know, they're trying to boost that they've got something that someone else doesn't have so that they draw more people into wanting to use them, thinking they have some secret sauce. That was the other thought process I had around that. It's like, oh, well, that's an interesting way to look at that. Trigger leads. There's new legislation out there. Everybody on this call probably knows and understands that there is a different legislation out there right now. I think I see it every day. I'm sure you probably do too. The new bill with having some limited circumstances on it, do you view this as a good thing? It's definitely, well, my opinion is it's better than what was originally proposed, but I would love to hear your opinion as well.
Yeah, and I can't remember. It was a gentleman from Tennessee that put it out there. I like it that it does have some carve-outs. I could see some value in, you know, keeping up with your current customers. At some point in time, we will have an early payoff problem. I don't think it's going to be this year, but, you know, knock on wood, maybe next year we see rates come down a little bit. There's going to be a sudden refi demand. And, you know, there would certainly be some value in keeping up with your own customer base to know that they're going somewhere else. There's also, I mean, just from, you could view it from a customer protection standpoint. I don't think we've seen this kind of VA churning like we saw several years ago, but, you know, outside when I applied for a loan within 24 hours, I had 15 calls, from based off of the trigger leads, and like three of them came from the same consumer direct shop, which I was like, guys, really? Like, they're literally fighting each other for the same leads. But yeah, I can see there being a consumer protection aspect to it that, you know, if you see somebody has pulled a mortgage report on your customer 2 months after closing, that you can reach out and explain to them, hey, this is not beneficial for you. Rates are not any lower. You know, you're about to pay a bunch of fees for money you're not going to recoup. So, you know, I could see there being some benefits there in some of those carve-outs. But in general, it's become abused. And it is abusive, but you've still got the folks that, you know, as soon as that property is recorded on public record, you know, here's another onslaught of letters that they do a very good job of making it look like it's from the lender. And, you know, I haven't seen a, not that I'm asking for more regulation. I haven't seen a whole lot of enforcement from a UDAP standpoint, but a lot of that really falls under a deceptive, you know, frame in my mind.
I closed on a house in February, and in my mailbox this week was another one of those, which I almost wish I would have, like, just from a, you know, interest perspective, just kept all of them in a stack to see how many there were. Because some weeks that was the bulk of my mail of all kinds of things. Like, I know that's not from who I closed, but opened it up and found out it was like a solicitation. You're probably lucky that you only got like 15 calls right away. We've heard stories of 200, 240. And I think, you know, for those of us that are in the mortgage industry, I think that we understand kind of what's going on and what they are. But I feel for people that don't either, it's their first time going through the process, especially. Mm-hmm. And I think it was originally something that was meant to help consumers know and understand what their options are. I think it's turned into something that's very confusing. And then the other thing is people that are older, you know, I think for them, it's like very confusing about who's calling me for what and who should I be talking to, and all of those types of things. There has been a lot of encouragement. The MBA did come out in this article this morning, and they are in support of the new one, which, a consumer reporting agency wouldn't be allowed to furnish a trigger lead to a third party unless the third party shows that they have the consumer's consent or they have a current relationship with the consumer. So, you know, that seems reasonable, I guess.
I get the existing business relationship part. I don't really get the consent part. Like, if someone is giving you consent, why don't you just pull their information directly? With any of these things, that language, if there's any carve outs there will be testing of the waters to see how far they can push loopholes and stuff. So
And it doesn't go into any further. I mean, what is that consent? I mean, is it something that you get from them in writing? Is it a phone call that you've made that you think they've said, yeah, talk to me further? It doesn't give any of that. So thought that was interesting. If you have any opinions on that, they are recommending that you do reach out to legislators, then, you know, kind of let them know whether you're in support of that or not, which is something that we always like to do and hear from the network. Something that we didn't talk about before, Keith, and I saw it after we had exchanged some information this morning, but I thought I would at least mention for everyone, is the FHA is now requiring lenders to ask for language preference. It's the first time I've seen it. It could have been out there because I'm not in the daily grind like you guys are. So they are asking, they are requiring lenders to ask for language preference. The good side of that, which I don't know if there's a bad side of that because I'm not in the daily. Share with me, you know, if you are and you have an opinion related to that. And Ashley just popped in. Thanks, Ashley, for popping that in there. It's a very large thing, apparently, on the servicing side of the business. But the good thing that I saw in that article was that they do have a space where they have translation docs now for all of the mortgage forms, or at least the forms that you have to have in Spanish, Chinese, Korean, Tagalog, and Vietnamese. And for those of you who didn't know, because I didn't know, Tagalog, 25% of the population of the Philippines, that is their native language. So I thought that that was good news out there, that finally, you know, people aren't maybe going to have to struggle as much as some have in the past with documents being translated. So have you heard anything about that at all?
A little bit. It's interesting because if I remember, and I may be completely wrong, so nobody quote me on this, but it seemed like one of the earlier versions of the IRLA actually asked for language preference on it, and then it got removed, if I remember correctly. And, you know, you used to have some of the vendors would have an application in Spanish, which, you know, Spanish was obviously the most popular, with it being the second most common language in the U.S., but then when we went to the IRLA transition, no one really at first took the time. None of the vendors were translating anything with that, which was kind of detrimental because that population segment kept growing and kept being a larger population of homebuyers. So it's interesting now it's kind of come back around, and we went from taking it off the docks to just more mandating it. But yeah, I agree. I mean, on the servicing side, even on the origination side, that helps. If you know who to route a customer to up front without coming to that language barrier, I think it's a better overall experience for anybody.
Yeah. And by the way, they did create a new form. It's called the Supplementary Consumer Information Form. That instead of it being on the IRLA, there is a form now that apparently is going to need to be completed. So consumer confidence, let's move on. Consumer confidence high, 17-month high, with some indicators, I would say, that the housing market is regaining some strength. I would love to hear what you are, you know, seeing out there. Are you feeling any of that at this point in your business?
I mean, it's better than it was. Certainly, I think the demand side is there. The demand did not get squash as much as you would have thought from the rates. It's the supply side that has been the problem. No one wants to list their house because they don't want to go from a three handle to a seven handle, I guess, on the rate. But yeah, it seems like there's still a lot of pent up demand. People want to buy. It's more the affordability and supply side issue. But it's funny you say, you know, I think demand's high, but you know, another talking point we had earlier was that the anxiety is high too. Everyone would say like a certain percentage of customers are more concerned about running out of money than they are dying now. So you always wonder what's a fate worse than death? It's running out of cash, I guess. So, I mean, I guess that's a sign of the interesting time in the economy. And maybe this whole rolling recession idea is a real thing. You know, if someone was in mortgage or in tech, they probably have a lot different view on the world than someone in the medical community or other industries that have not seen any pullbacks.
I think that that was interesting. There was an article out there that did say that people were more concerned about running out of cash than anything else. That's what was raising their anxiety the most in the world today. So I did think that that was interesting. I wonder if that's because people felt like when they were getting some assistance during the pandemic that they were more flush with cash, and now, you know, some of those things have stopped. But I would always love to hear like the background story of what the article doesn't say. One of the things that was in the consumer confidence report was that home builder confidence was positive in June for the first time in 11 months. We were talking before we got online here about, you know, what some home builders are doing. It seems like there's a wide span of how people are dealing things in the building space. I'm in a new development. There are three buildings being built in my development, but they're not being put on the market right away. And originally, I think that was because of supply. Supply was an issue for a long period of time. Now it seems more like they're not putting them under contract or putting them on the market. Instead, they're creating like a wait list of people that may have interest because they don't want to price those units at this point in time. So any feedback on anything that you've seen from builders that you guys work with or, you know, experiences that you've had?
Yeah, we're certainly seeing the wait list approach by some of the larger scale builders. And we deal more smaller scale custom builders than we do the bigger ones. But you know, God bless those guys. The last downturn hit them hard. And you could tell they were all once bitten, twice shy, and not, you know, home building has not come back to the level it's needed to in the last decade. And I think, you know, they were squeamish. They didn't want to get burned again. And I think they saw, okay, you know, we've been talking about having a recession for so long. I don't know if anyone cares. They just want something new to talk about now. But I think those guys kind of saw what we didn't really expect with the rapid rate increase was the supply side. And now they're in the catbird seat that they are the only supplier of, you know, of properties hitting the market. So I think that's certainly boosting their confidence. You know, if we come through this with the quote unquote soft landing or something, then that bodes really well for them. You know, if we don't and we do have a large scale recession, that's going to be tough if they're sitting there on a bunch of specs that they haven't pre-sold that they could have locked that in. But conversely, it didn't really matter if it pre-sold and the buyer lost their job. But, you know, I think they learned from the past and they saw that they were leaving money on the table the last year that, you know, they pre-sold this house for $750 and turns out they could have sold it for $850. So I think they're trying to maximize what they've got
and make up for some of that. You know, they estimated a certain percentage of the house as lumber and the whole lumber thing when it happened, it's like lumber was double and those things. I would agree with that I think they're kind of trying to maybe make up for lost time. We just have a couple minutes left here. I always say it always goes so fast, but we thought that we would end on like kind of a good note. So we wanted to talk about employment a little bit before we ended. Mortgage banking firms added 800 full-timers to their payrolls in May, which I thought was great news. We're still hearing some of the other But it's coming from kind of, I would say, particular markets, not markets, particular segments, I would say, of the mortgage industry. So share with me kind of like how you're feeling about that, what you've heard from all the people that you know that are in the mortgage industry. Do you think we've kind of turned the corner and are beginning to head in a little bit of a different direction?
Knock on wood here. I don't know. I want to say we've turned the corner. I think we've been having pretty good success rate recruiting on the sales side lately. And I mean, I can't bring people on and not be able to deliver. And I think this is what we're seeing is that everybody had, you know, the right sizing or whatnot. They had turned down operations to the level they needed, but they're still trying to grow sales. And I mean, you're going to need for every X number of widgets that, you know, you add, you've got to have somebody to process and underwrite that. So we've done a little back office hiring in the last month or so. I think those stats were also showing for non-bank lenders, and we're still seeing some depositories pulling back or pulling out, and seeing some folks move from the depository side over to the IMB side, which I think is kind of spurring some of that. Again, if you, their sales folks in those numbers too, but you know, they've got to grow their operations back. I think everybody's trying to do it a little more scaled and conservative approach, but you're still seeing people move around. And as the number of players get smaller, that's going to concentrate more people at, you know, at other institutions.
I think people are taking that opportunity too. We've heard a lot of people that are, you know, after the pandemic and everything, they maybe, you know, kind of hung out where they were, but they're looking for a slightly different culture. Culture all of a sudden has become, you know, much more important to them as they're making a job selection. So I think, you know, when good people go on the market, people always will grab them up for sure. We did have one question in the chat, which before we go, we'll try to answer. Can mortgage bankers or loan officers order their own appraisals, or do they need to go through AMCs? You can order directly from an appraiser, but a production person is not able to do that anymore. I can't remember the year. Keith, if you remember off the top of your head, the year that change was made, it's been a number of years ago.
Yeah, I think it's been, I was thinking a decade. There's 2008. Okay, so what's it, 15 years ago?
Yeah, that sounds about right. I know I was in the appraisal space until 2011, and it had changed at that point. Anybody involved with the production of a loan cannot be involved in the ordering of an appraisal, either through an AMC or directly to an appraiser. So I hope that answers your question. If not, reach out and we will try to get you more information around that. Keith, it is always a pleasure. I always know that I can just have a great conversation with you about anything. You're so knowledgeable in our space, and really appreciate you hopping on today and talking with us.
Well, thanks for having me. And I guess we're, 2 months out from being able to have in-person conversations again. So
sure, we are. I definitely would expect and hope that we will be seeing you in Nashville for our conference that is September 10th through 12th. For those of you who have not registered yet, we would love to have you join us. And for those of you on the call, or those of you listening to this, I guess, in podcast form, join us someday. It's a lot of fun. We would love to have your feedback in our chat. And if you are not aware and you miss these conversations, sometimes we post them out on YouTube. So we do have a YouTube channel that you can pick them up from if you want to listen back to what this last week's was and missed it. So appreciate you, Keith. As always, can't wait to see you in Nashville. Hope that all goes well between now and then for you.
Thanks. Enjoyed it.
We'll see you. Thanks, everybody, for joining us today.
For more information about how you can get involved with TMC Connect and witness the power of the network firsthand, please visit us at mortgagecollaborative.com.